question is to a great extent about analogizing culture to biology. And we talked about in the previous show on culture evolution, I talked about some of the theorists who proposed the dual model of sort of a parallel track of cultural evolution, which mimics or can be analogized, perhaps not perfectly, but significantly analogized to biological evolution. But here's the problem with the concept of cultural evolution. If a child is born with innate characteristics, cultural characteristics, with innate beliefs, that's akin to saying that those were genetically encoded. So if you were to say, if you were to take the position that children are born with a predisposition to believing in freedom and democracy, now they're born that way, but maybe 1,000 years ago they weren't. That would seem to entail a claim that there's been a genetically transmitted predisposition to certain beliefs. And in fact, that's what the cultural evolution theorists argue, that things like predisposition to cooperation, predisposition to trusting people, those things have been transmitted in an evolutionary fashion from generation to generation because they're advantageous, right? They provide an evolutionary advantage. People that cooperate with others have an evolutionary advantage to people that wouldn't cooperate. And they claim that that's an example of cultural evolution. But I doubt that. I deny that for this reason, that if such a predisposition were transmitted from generation to generation, what would be the vehicle for such transmission? Would it be genes? If it's genes, then it's reducible to biological evolution. Then it's simply biological evolution. It's simply natural selection. It's no different than any other type of biological evolution. There's been genetic evolution, which causes certain, you know, predispositions.
That's interesting. So you're not, in this instance, you're not necessarily arguing that there isn't an evolutionary mechanism for it. There seems to be, at least in this case, we're entertaining. But it's just that you don't need to appeal to something like cultural evolution. It can just be reduced to biological evolution.
Right. Because if you were to take that path, so if you were to argue that certain cultural, what we call cultural predispositions to certain kind of beliefs or behavior, cooperation, non-cooperation, aggressiveness, passiveness, whatever those characteristics might be, if you were to argue on one hand that those characteristics were perpetuated from generation to generation in an evolutionary fashion, it seems to me that that claim would be reducible to a claim of biological evolution, because the mechanism for the propagation of those characteristics must have been physical, in which it would be genetic. So in that case, we've eliminated cultural evolution. We've reduced it to biological evolution. But there's another possibility. And this is what the contemporary theorists who are promoting the ideas about cultural evolution argue, is that there's a parallel track, which is not reducible to biological evolution. It's a parallel track, which they call cultural evolution. The mechanism for the propagation of cultural traits that is analogous to genes in the biological world, those are memes. So memes are cultural ideas. Cultural ideas are transmitted through memes, not genes. And the analogy continues that they attempt to make here. They claim that just as in the biological world of evolution, genes are contained as information within DNA. They argue that, well, the analogy is that in the cultural world, memes are contained within words and books and statues and artifacts and film and all of the mechanisms by which memes are transmitted are recorded and transmitted from generation to generation, just like DNA and the information contained within DNA, which, you know, are genes, in the genes. So the analogy continues something like this. So a poem is a cultural information. The contents of the poem, the meaning of the poem, that's cultural information. That's a meme. But the paper and the pen and the ink on which the poem is written is analogous to DNA. So the DNA contains within it, or the paper and the ink contain within it, meaning, which is decoded. It's decoded and contains cultural content, cultural information. And the claim is that this cultural evolutionary process mimics or tracks or is analogous to biological evolution. And therefore, there's a such thing as cultural evolution. It exists. It's not reducible to biological evolution. Cultural evolution is on a track of its own. Oh, to be sure, it interacts intimately with biological evolution. There's many examples of that. But it is a distinct track of evolution, which is analogous in many ways to biological evolution. It's a thing. Cultural evolution is a thing. And there's a lot of contemporary researchers and universities where they are really studying how it works, how it can be thought of as analogous to biological evolution. Here's the problem. Let's go back to my distinction between per accident and per se causal chains. In biological evolution, when evolution happens, the offspring innately possesses the characteristics, the aggregate or the accumulation or the history of all the changes that have happened, genetic changes that have happened to members of that organism species. No further action is required in biological evolution per accident's causal chain. And that's why it's evolutionary, per accident's causal chain. But critically and importantly, in this model of cultural evolution being promoted, I'm arguing that the type of causal chain that is happening is not a per accidents causal chain. It's a per se causal chain, which in the biological world specifically precludes it being evolutionary. Critically, in the cultural world, cultural information is not innately acquired by offspring. If it were, it would be reducible to biological, and there would be no cultural evolution. But if it were not acquired innately, then it would have to be learned. And if it weren't learned, it wouldn't be had. So either way, it's not evolution. Either way, if you say that a child acquired cultural beliefs innately, they were not relearned, they were not learned anew, then that's a reducibility to biological. It must have been genetic. On the other hand, the other possibility is that you argue that, well, it's not genetic, but then you would have to say that that offspring would have to learn from square one cultural values. How would those values be learned? Well, obviously, through books, through teachers, from parents, and certainly, just as the cultural evolutionists argue, from poems, from statues, all the different artifacts and symbols and all the ways that culture is transmitted. But the problem is it's transmitted per se. The stimulus has to be there. If a child does not receive stimuli from its environment teaching that child culture values, the child wouldn't have those culture values. The child would be completely confused. Therefore, if you would take the position that cultural information is not transmitted genetically, then you are making a claim which entails a per se causal chain. In other words, the stimulus is required, and if the stimulus isn't there, the causal chain doesn't happen. But that's precisely the type of causal chain that in the biological world is not evolutionary. There, that leads me to my conclusion that there is no such thing as cultural evolution, because the two types of change that can happen with culture, neither of them is evolutionary. Well, one of them is evolutionary, but it's reducible to biological evolution. Therefore, there's no cultural evolution. It's simply biological evolution. And the other case is that there is cultural change, which is not genetically encoded, but it's not evolutionary, because it's per se, it has to be learned and reacquired from the beginning by every offspring. No cultural evolution. It's a misnomer. It's internally a contradictory concept.
Michael's two horns. You've got, on the one side, it's just reducible to biological evolution, or it is a per se cause and therefore is not evolutionary. Take your pick. Cultural evolutionary theorists.
In the latter example, if I'm born, I don't know anything unless it's been genetically encoded, in which case it's biological, simply biological evolution. If I don't know anything, then someone's got to teach me. Otherwise, I don't know it. Then it's not evolution. It's like getting hit over the head, or it's like a big rainstorm coming by. You know, it's going to affect me, but it didn't affect me because of evolution. It affected me because I got hit over the head with something, or because a big cloud came over and hailed on me and it caused my head to hurt.
Right. Yeah.
I'm born in a teacher teaches me that democracy is good and dictatorship's bad. Oh, okay. A storm came by. So now that changed me, right? It changed my mind. It changed my thinking. I've now acquired cultural beliefs.
Yeah.
But I didn't acquire them through evolution. I acquired them through, a experience that I had.
Mm-hmm.
Another way to look at it is there's a distinction between acquiring information through the senses, through perception, and acquiring information through genetic change. If I'm born with big ears, or I'm born with, automatically knowing how to put one, foot in front of the other and walk, although that's arguable. People might argue whether that's instinctual or not. If I'm born with certain instincts, with certain innate characteristics or beliefs or knowledge, that's probably or almost certainly an evolutionary type thing, genetic. It's genetically encoded. If I'm not born with those things and someone's got to teach me, I acquire it through perception. So if I go to school, the teacher's talking, the teacher shows me books, the teacher puts stuff on the board. That's information that I acquire through perception, through my sense perceptions, whether it's hearing or sight. When I am around role models, parents, siblings, friends, through my sense perception, I learn about how they act and what they believe and what they expect of me and so on. If I do something that's proscribed by the law and wind up in a courtroom or in jail or whatever, then my sense perceptions tell me that, oops, I violated some cultural rule. I've now learned more about the culture, but I had to be hit over the head, right? I had to either verbally or through sight or sound or in some way, through sense perception, I had to acquire this information. That's not evolutionary change. That's simply sense perception. Sense perception is not an evolutionary acquisition. It's an immediate sort of one-off. I mean, it can be repeated if it's repeated, but it's sort of like an ad hoc acquisition of information which causes me to change. It's not evolutionary. So there's no such thing as cultural evolution, because however the change happened, it's either reducible biological or it's not evolution. Oh, I'm not denying cultural change. Sure, of course cultures change.
Mm-hmm. Just don't call it evolution.
Yeah, I think it's wrong. I don't think cultures are analogous to biology.
Mm.
For that critical fundamental reason, is biology can be transmitted genetically. That's what genetics are is all about. That's what our genes do. They propagate physical characteristics from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
Cultural characteristics, certainly they change, but they're not necessary. I mean, I could be born, you know, in a subculture, and people are, which have very different values.
Mm-hmm.
I could be born in isolation and be completely ignorant of cultural values around me. So it's completely dependent on what people say.
So you bring memes into this, and I think this is an important point, because maybe the misstep is in trying to the misstep with the biological and cultural analogy, this twin track that the two things take. So when I think of memes and I think about the way that memes propagate, there's something kind of panpsychist about it. So let's say a poem exists and it is propagating itself. You know, there are successful poems. There is that, if I say that Robert Frost poem, you'll know which one I'm talking about. And then there are unsuccessful poems. It's not so, but the sense in which the meme propagates is seen kind of from the perspective of the meme itself, right? And things like the human mind and culture are just the environment that it is either successful or unsuccessful at adapting to and navigating. But the cultural theorists don't take the perspective of the meme itself. They look at the biological side of it, the humans who are the agents of propagating these things. I think what I'm trying to say goes back to what we were talking about in previous episodes, that has to do with the dualism sort of inherent in the analogy between cultural and biological evolution, that these things aren't as analogous as maybe memes are a good analogy, or they use an analogy to biology in a good way, but the analogy is not sufficiently analogous to be able to found a field of cultural evolution, I think is what I'm trying to say. I think that when I say that memes seem kind of panpsychist to me, I'm saying they seem radically distinct from a purely biological mechanism in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Well, you're right. You alluded to two possible objections. And it's always important, advantageous in philosophy arguments to acknowledge possible objections and to address them preemptively.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do that. So I think you alluded to these, both of these. So one of the objections to my argument might be that no analogy is perfect. Why is the disanalogy that I'm claiming, in other words, the distinction between per accidents and per se causal chains, why is that, how would you say, why is it fatal, as I'm claiming, to the arguments for cultural evolution? Why is it devastating? And it is because I think it's a fundamental difference. It's a huge difference. The difference between these two types of causal chains are fundamental. And so if the disanalogy between culture and biological is that, you know, is these two types of causal chains, I think it does defeat the overall analogy. I don't think it can be tolerated as merely a inconsequential disanalogy. Fundamentally different. The way genetics are transmitted is fundamentally different from culture.
Yeah, I think the important thing here is that plenty of people have said there's an analogy between culture and biology, and we don't have to pay attention to the entire analogy, but let's pay attention to the way that things are transmitted. the reason that this is fatal is because it is showing a radical metaphysical distinction in the way that things can be transmitted causally. And you are saying they are disanalogous in a categorical sense. One is per se, the other is per accidens. So the analogy just does not hold in, even in the qualified way that you want to argue.
Right. That's my response to that objection. Now, there's another objection, which I think you alluded to, which is that I'm making an error because the study or the claims around cultural evolution are with respect to the way culture propagates, not necessarily to the way people acquire those changes. So the objection to my argument might be something like, well, if we just look at culture itself, it seems to propagate through memes, which are analogous to genes, in much the same way that genetic changes propagate in the biological world. That's the claim, the dual inheritance claim. The way that people or new offspring may acquire or not acquire cultural information is not the point. The point is that the culture itself evolves from the culture's point of view. The culture evolves. And who can deny that culture evolves? So there must be some mechanism for the evolution of that culture. And the argument would go, the objection to my claim is that it's sort of irrelevant. It's related to this first objection, right? The per se versus per accidens disanalogy. So it's sort of an extension of that, the disanalogy is not devastating to the overall analogy because culture itself, if we look at it from the cultural point of view, it does evolve. And how offspring might acquire cultural information is not relevant to the way the culture has evolved itself. Just because offspring don't acquire it, if a offspring was raised in pure isolation and had no sense perception such that it acquired cultural information, it doesn't mean that the cultural evolution didn't happen. But here's my response to that objection, it's crazy to think about that, because it's crazy to think of culture as being something separate from people. This thing that can just propagate by itself without people, it makes no sense. Because after all, culture is what might be called observer relative, or sometimes called ontologically subjective. Culture only exists in people's minds. If there were no people, there would be no culture. So culture is not like this ontologically distinct entity that just can go on without people. You can't look at culture without looking at the way way it's propagated in people's minds. There's no way to, you can't say, well, you know, I'm going to study culture the way I'm going to study a rock, or the way I'm going to study, you know, biological processes, like the way rivers, you know, create V-shaped, canyon valleys, you know, in mountain ranges. You can't do that because culture is nothing more than ideas in people's minds. So you can't divorce culture from people. And so I don't see how you can think of culture as some kind of phenomena that is not intimately dependent on the way it's transmitted from person to person and from generation to generation. So if we admit that culture can only be viewed as ideas that transmit from generation to generation, then suddenly it becomes completely relevant again that the way it's transmitted from generation to generation is not through genetics, or if it is, it's not culture. It's not cultural evolution, is biological evolution. But if culture is not transmitted genetically, then it becomes critically important that the way it's transmitted from generation to generation is through sense perception. And that's not evolution. It's sense perception.
That was one of the things that I was going to bring up earlier too, is that there seems to be a necessary or a condition of necessity for culture, that humans need to exist. They are a necessary condition. To use the language that we're using now, though, it's interesting to think or to wonder, I wonder what you would say to this, that humans are a per se cause of culture, that they are a necessarily existing cause of culture, that if the humans leave, if the humans cease to exist, the culture ceases to exist, in the same way that when the candle goes out, the room goes dark.
Culture is a per se causal chain.
If you took an organism and just threw it in space, there wouldn't be an environment there anymore to adapt to. My worry is that evolution also has a per se causal chain where the environment is a necessary, or it's a per se necessary condition for evolution. And so evolution involves a per se causal chain as well, analogous to the one that cultural evolution depends on with humans. So in this way, there's at least an analogy using your own causal distinction here.
Well, yeah, the conditions for life must exist. But if the conditions exist for life, then that life will, per accidents, will acquire genetic traits of the species. You're giving an example of another gray area and how it's not a cut and dry analysis, but I still stand by my fundamental distinction. There's my argument about the non-existence of cultural evolution. Thanks so much for listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show. Please email us at hello@philosophyshow.ca. You can find the Canadian Philosophy Show at tcps.podbean.com and on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
She said, I knocked my head.